Brzezinski. We're returning for our second half hour with Senator James Rhodes. This is Children Come First, and we have been talking about parental involvement. It would seem to me that, and I'm just in awe sitting here listening to you. You are so well-versed on so many different things
with regard to what needs to happen in schools.
And my question is, how do we train teachers? We train teachers in curriculum and content area, but we really don't train them in communication skills on how to deal and work with parents. Is that something that needs to be done in our teacher training programs?
Yeah, I think that's one of the big things. And, I put it myself. That's something I had to learn to do, and I think I learned it through experience. I mean, one of the things we have to realize, too, is when the teacher's in the classroom, and remember, they're with the boys and girls all day long. It's their 20 or 30 kids that they have. They're responsible for them. You know, in an office, I can set up appointments and bring parents in. As a teacher, I can't do that, because if I do, I move out, and I don't get a chance, you know, then I'm not going to be with my boys and girls for that time period. So that makes it difficult. The other thing, too, is after school, and teachers do this. I mean, you know, they can say, well, there's some that don't, yes, but there are many that do, that will meet with the parents as far as it goes. Part of the thing is, you got to remember, it's at the end of a day. Just like when somebody finishes their shift at the factory or the office or where they're at, they're just as tired and frustrated as a teacher could be at the end of the day. And I think part of that is what we have to learn to address is that, look, let's not get into a confrontational type of thing. You know, we've had this from the standpoint of, you know, you don't like my child, you're right, I don't. And then automatically we're fighting. And that's not the case. There should be opportunity for that communication and respect. And see, that's the other thing I think that's disappeared, is we're not trusting the judgment of our professional educators to say this is what has to be done. Everyone can tell you what to do in education, okay? Everybody has an answer to it. Now, I go with Gardner's 7 means by which you can learn. I understand that. But somewhere along the line, we have to be able to follow the model, do the trust, and communicate. There's a number of different ways I think it can be set up. Just from the standpoint of come to school nights, and so all the parents can meet with the teacher at the same time and just do the overview. Then we could set up other days as part of in-service where parents have appointments to come in at that particular time. Unfortunate thing is both parents are working, and it's hard for them to take off, but that's where business can help out. Business keeps saying they want to help out. One of the ways is release parents from their job to be able to go to school to meet with the teacher during that time, or even to go into the school on occasion to work with their child in the school. That's where the positives would come out of this. Second thing could be done, too, is those parents who are fortunate to be home so that they could go into school, programs could be set up for them to come in and do it. And not always just copying papers or, sharpening pencils or that stuff. There's some other things they could do in terms of reading, some tutoring. One of the things we have to worry about, though, is that the confidentiality of each and every student is protected. So as a parent, I don't come in and I don't talk about my child to someone else or someone else's child to somebody else. And that's one of the biggest fears that goes on through this program. And that's why it's important that when we do these and we have these activities, there's a respect, a communication in there, there's a confidentiality in there.
Nothing goes out. It's almost like I bring everything in and share it with the kids, and everything is positive. Nothing's negative. We'll deal with the negatives, but turn them into positives.
You can do these things. It's been done. I mean, when I did my report on this, I did it up at Penn State. I must have took out 7 or 8 books that are written on different programs for different parental involvement programs. Always the results show, though. And when I did the research, I looked through. One was a review of, I think, about 25 or 50 pieces of research. And I can't remember who the researcher was on it, but looked at about parental involvement, and in all the programs, it was successful. I looked at about another 25 by myself, individual pieces.
They were all successful.
So what we're saying is, when parents are involved with their boys and girls,
whether it's at the preschool,
elementary, junior high, middle school, or senior high level, those kids are successful. Knowing that, I guess the question I always have to continue to ask is, why does it always take us so long to understand this and put this in school? I introduced this legislation a long time ago, and unfortunately, school boards association said, well, it's a mandate you're giving us, and it's going to cost money to do. But I'm looking and saying, but that's the kind of investment I want to make, because the return I get is much more significant than any money I can put in for a lot of other programs.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Let's go on to another subject, and that is the virtual university and distance learning. With our, I mean, we have, for example, in Philadelphia alone, there's 5, 6, 7 more than that universities in Philadelphia. And Luzerne County, there's 6 or 7 universities. Each of them are struggling for students who are coming to school in terms of their enrollment. And now they're all competing with each other for that enrollment. And you're looking at starting a virtual university in distance learning.
What will that do?
What is it, for example, and to give us an example? And then how does that impact universities here in the state?
Let's say one, number one, many of the universities and colleges in the state are doing it right now. Okay. Matter of fact, I just talked to a professor from Penn State who is doing his course over Pictel. So he's at Penn State and offering a course down here in Harrisburg. He's coming down here to Harrisburg to meet with the students and he'll transfer it back to Penn State. It's been going on for a number of years. And I think it's a marketplace demand right now. First of all, the amount of information in the world is doubling. And I'd stand corrected on this, but I'll say probably today in the year 2000, probably every 2 to 3 years, the amount of information in the world doubles. By the year 2015, and I saw this out of one report, they said the amount of information in the world will double every 72 to 73 days. That being the case, for me to, as an employee somewhere, I have to constantly be on the ball, learning, as we used to say, be retread 3 or 4 times in a lifetime for your job. Now we're probably up to 7 or 8, maybe even 10 times during a lifetime to be retrained. Learning is a lifestyle. It's not an end in itself. And so the end result is, by putting a virtual university in place, you're going to be able at home on your TV, and I can say that probably with modifications, but definitely on your computer, you can do it now. But we're looking to be able to add to that so that on your computer at home, in your local high school, in your local business, in any centers we can use around, you will have the availability of getting training. And I'm not only talking about a graduate level or an undergraduate level courses. I'm talking about business courses. If it's a half-day program, a full day, whatever the course may be, where I can get certification or training, be it on a computer, be it in history, be it in math, be it in accounting. Even the service that did it for reserves, they were being trained down in Virginia somewhere by someone up in New York. Saves you loads of money because I don't have to transport the people. I don't have to pay for the room. I don't have to pay for the board. All of this goes on. My other thing, too, is when you look at the cost of college today, it continues to go up. We have out in, I guess it was Greene County, was a young man out there, went to the University of Pittsburgh. He had his first 15 or 30 credits already earned at his home school. So you look at the money he saved. The other thought is, if I could, as some say, you would do it through community colleges, but if I could do the same thing through the virtual university at home or close by, the amount of money I save for room and board my first or second year will allow me to pay for my room and board my third and fourth year. And when you start looking at prices like $20,000, $25,000, $36,000 for tuition and room and board, how many people can afford that? Okay, now that's not true for everywhere, but it is not, it's not cheap. And part of the thing of saying is, this is information, this is learning, you have the internet, why can't I learn from there, why can't I pick it up? And if learning is important, it should be there.
So what we're looking to do is be able to try and establish across the Commonwealth in all 67 of our counties, through our IUs and the businesses and everywhere else, along with our state system of higher ed, our state related, our community colleges, even in my home county. Well, I'll tell you what, the Manufacturers Association for the United States offers 500 courses over the internet. So you can pick them up. Now, you have to pay for them, okay? You can, there's X amount you pay for. But if I am an employee somewhere and want to learn maybe some OSHA regulations, I can do that. And we have to make that available. The other thing, too, is I don't have the luxury of leaving my job and traveling 2 hours to a college campus. Maybe some people are fortunate they only have to drive 10 or 15 minutes. Well, a lot of us can't do that. So I leave my job, well, if it's at home or it's in my local high school or there's something close by I can get into and take that course and get that certification or get that diploma or get that degree, why not?
Excellent, especially in the rural areas of the state where colleges and institutions of higher learning don't even exist.
That's one of the things, too, we've done, and it's been going on. I mean, I can speak to the Schuylkill IU, I can speak to the Carbon Lehigh, and I know, I guess it's the Northumberland County area, which would be, I guess, the Susquehanna IU. They're already offering courses. They've contracted with some colleges, universities, who are offering the courses for like $90 a course. Now, you say, what's smart about that? Well, normally it might be $210, but if I offer it to you in high school at $90 and you pick up 15 or 30 credits with me, when you make a decision where you're going to go to school, you're going to go to the school where you already have 15, 30 credits, or you're going to look and go and try and start somewhere all over again. And so the end result is that's that competition that's driving us
out there, okay? But Penn State offers it, I know.
King's does, Wilkes does, Scranton does. And I know there's a number of other colleges and universities across the Commonwealth that do that, and there's a number of school districts participating in that. So the kids have a chance. Two things, as I say, they have a chance to get courses that they could not normally get. You know, if I'm in a rural area and I want to get Russian, they're not going to hire one Russian teacher for
two or three students.
But if we get on, as I say, the virtual university, I can have a Russian teacher down in suburban Philadelphia who's teaching a class of 10, joining with my three here and my five here. Somewhere along the last, I end up with a class of 20 and can offer that. Second thing is, I guess it was out of Keystone Oaks, which is north of Pittsburgh. They went through a building project. They spent like $5 million on
high tech. When we had the teacher come in and testified before us for our distance education,
teacher said, we had the Nobel Prize winner in astrophysics from MIT speaking to our kids via the link. He said, I'm sitting there, my knees are knocking because I know who this man is, but the kids are asking all kinds of questions. Now, the opportunity for the kids to have a guest lecture or a guest in, you just wouldn't be able to do that. If you had to pay for that, you couldn't afford to do it, and the kids just wouldn't have that opportunity. So here's a chance for kids to talk to a Nobel Prize winner in astrophysics out of MIT. They would not get that. This way, by the link, by a virtual university, you get that opportunity. So at a secondary level, it's great. For business, they get to train their employees
who are already there. They get to
train the employees who they want to hire. And then we can look at a community college. We can get an associate degree, get a baccalaureate degree, or even do graduate work. As a matter of fact, I spoke to someone who said her son is taking a course out of Minnesota, and it's a graduate master's degree program. He does not go to Minnesota. He does it all over the internet. It's here, and we should use it, and we just have to get it organized so that it's available to everyone.
Now, I heard you talk about Wilkes and King's and Penn State, but can the small schools like the Sheehy schools afford to incorporate this, or are you know, is there help for this, or I'm assuming this costs some money?
It does, but they're doing it already. The Sheehy system is up. That's one of the things that I've found out is it seems there are a number of systems out there that are already doing this. I know I had talked to the chancellor, and he had offered when we were trying to get this up and running
You know, the faculty of Bloomsburg and East Stroudsburg would be available. But I know, likewise, Kutztown and the rest of the system is online, already doing this, already putting the courses out. They've been doing it for years. As a matter of fact, I think out of Bloomsburg, I think it was Cottersport and Renova, which are up two northern tier communities. The professor was in Bloom and then rotated around to the other areas every week, and the classes were in three different spots, but by the link, they were all linked up, and the class was offered. So that they were already doing this, okay? Now, you're paying your tuition, the regular kind of credits, you would.
If you want credit for it, that's what you have to do.
So, and it's like any other course. Have to have X amount of people, therefore it justifies, you know, offering the course. They do the same thing again.
Let's talk a little bit about codes of student conduct. There aren't any state regulations. And by the way, you are listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here today with Senator James Rhodes from the Senate Education Committee, and we're talking about various issues regarding our children. And one of them is about codes of student conduct. How do you feel about legislating conduct in schools?
I don't think you can legislate conduct in schools. I think, you know, that's something you get at home. And
unfortunately, we live in a much different society today.
We have greater discipline problems than we had at any other particular time. But like anything else, if you want an organization to run, there has to be discipline in the organization. And I don't care if that's the United States Army, Air Force, Navy, or Marines. There's discipline there. If you want to run your company, you have to have
discipline there.
If you want to run the school, there has to be discipline there. Has to be a set of rules or regulations by which you function. You just can't do helter-skelter or you have anarchy.
The end result today is, you know, at one time there was always X amount of fear.
We don't have that today. And the end result is, because there isn't any fear, there isn't any respect. Now, I'm not looking from the standpoint that, you know, you're going to bend every
boy or girl over your knee and spank them.
That's not necessary. But for those who can't behave, something has to be done. And parents have to be responsible for their kids, too. You just can't send them to school and say, well, now you take care of them, they're yours. You can do anything you want to them. I've often said, you bring that child into the world, you have a responsibility to raise that child and be with that child. And you don't face up to that, then I don't really have much use for you. I really don't.
But I'm saying, in the schools, I went through that all the time. I was a disciplinarian, and it just had to be. And I probably got accused of being rougher and everything else. I've never really seen a teacher who intentionally went out to hurt any child or to hit any child from the standpoint of doing damage. Basically, it was from the standpoint of, come here, I've got to talk to you. As I said, I'm responsible for running this school. I'm responsible that the teachers teach and that you learn. And it's my job to get it done. And if you're acting up and misbehaving and creating a disturbance, you're not learning, but you're interfering with everyone else that's learning. And that's not right, because what happens is, when the time comes down for you to have the skills to get the job, you're not going to be able to do that, okay? And you're going to interfere with the others that want to learn too. So you got to be there and learn. I'm just asking. Now, if something's unreasonable, talk to me. But other than that, you have to be there. And parents have to back up.
I mean, you just have to do that. I mean, you know, I may not agree with you. Let me put it this way. As a parent, I may not agree with you as the teacher what you did. Let's talk about it. We'll discuss it. But I'm going to back you up so that my child understands teacher's the boss. Just as you're the boss in the classroom, I'm the boss at home. And it's not a matter we're going to argue.
I'll talk about it, but the final say is mine, okay? And as I say, you know, we talk about student rights and responsibilities.
Students have rights, but I think the responsibilities should be, how should we say, as you get older, your rights get greater because your responsibilities get greater. And I think you have to grow and mature into that. And we're assuming to give to kids an awful lot of rights and responsibilities, and they're saying, you can't do this to me, you can't do that to me,
and they're challenging.
I mean, it amazes me to see such young kids with the vocabulary and the foul mouths they have at such early ages, and the challenging that they do.
And, I'm disappointed in that. And I think that's why I look at, I'll say,
a state this code of conduct. And let's set it down so that it's the same in all the schools, so that, one school can be very strict and follow through on a code of conduct, another may be loose. No, let's put it down. I'm also to the point of saying, as I often said, I'll establish in the eastern part of the state and the western part of the state, shall we say, behavioral modification schools. We'll give you your due process. If you can't, I'm going to send you to that school, and you're going to learn how to behave. You're going to learn what time to get up, what time to have breakfast, when to do your homework, when to milk the cows. Yes, sir, no, sir, thank you, ma'am, no, thank you, ma'am. That doesn't hurt anybody. And I think you'll find out those people who do that go a lot further in life than those who are crude and ignorant and mean, because that's what it is. And, I just think we have to get back to that. If you have discipline, you'll have an awful lot of other things. And we've done away with that, and we keep letting it go by the board. And I think the lawyers and the judges have to get a little tough with this and stay away from the standpoint. Defend students' rights, yes, but not to the point that anything goes on. You can't run an institution without some form of order, and you can't continue to challenge it all the time, not if you want to learn.
Dovetailing into that are safe schools.
You are
chairman of the Senate Education Committee, and are you looking at legislation in terms of creating safer schools in the state of Pennsylvania?
We did, and I'll tell you what, we really were moving on that before the Columbine incident occurred. That was a tragedy. I don't know why it always takes us tragedies before we're a crisis before we begin to pay attention to it.
I'll say this.
Even though we moved our legislation, it came out of committee, and some of it's moved to the House, and it's been there, I think the schools have responded themselves quite well. I was impressed that 6 months to 9 months after that. The governor put a number of dollars in for technology to be put in and all the other things that we need. I felt this basic line: when I send my son or daughter to school,
I want to know that they're safe, and the parents have
to believe that. It's kind of a sad commentary that I got to put metal detectors up, that I have to have cameras here, that I have to have police in the hall. Should begin to tell us something, where we have to make the changes going back to discipline. By the same token, too, if that's what it needs for me to have a safe environment, then I guess that's what I'm going to have to use at the particular time.
But I think...
A lot of things spell in society, and I still look at the violent games, I still look at the TV, and they say, no, it doesn't do anything. When you look at that, and we look at TV so much, it's a lifestyle, people begin to think that's the way people live. We don't live that way. We shouldn't live that way. Maybe some people have to live on it. There's nothing more upsetting to me than to see some young person get shot.
As an innocent victim standing on the side, you can say, get rid of guns and the rest.
No. Because they can harm in any other way. It's the people who are using those that have to be changed, that have to be modified, okay? And like I said, for safe schools, whatever we have to do, and we're looking for that, and we're always looking for suggestions for the people in the schools. You have some more, come back to us. If it's cameras, if it's machines, if it's attitudes, if it's changing, then we have to
do what we have to, because the schools do have to be safe.
I think you're right, though. I think you hit the nail on the head that we really have to do something. The school is a reflection of the community. The community is a reflection of the parents. And we seem to be doing a lot of after the fact rather than prevention. And probably the best thing we can focus on is to begin to educate our parents. Somehow
we got in the 60s the idea that our children were, to be free for all, that free age where they weren't to be disciplined, they were to be our friends. And I don't know where people got this attitude from, but it seems to pervade, especially my generation of people from the 60s. And that's how we now have children who have children who, again, are not being properly groomed at home. In every single way that creates societal confirmation, where we have people who are working within the community rather than fighting. And the issue of respect and tolerance and the vocabulary is just... I walk in schools and I can't believe what I hear in the halls in elementary school, much less middle school and high school. So we need to really look at, and again, the television, I agree with you, so, but we keep blaming schools. And we keep blaming teachers when we don't take responsibility ourselves as parents.
And I think you're absolutely right. It's critical that parents become involved in their children's lives. Is there any direction that you would like to see? What would you see happen in those critical years and with parents? Should teachers and schools begin to move towards educating parents in their communities? I know this sounds ridiculous, but I think maybe that's the direction we need to go.
I think there's a couple of things, and that's where I come back to my parental involvement again. You know, if I start that early enough and I get involved, hopefully I can begin to make changes. It's not going to happen overnight. It won't be a 6 months or a year. It's going to take a number of years to do that. We didn't get this way overnight. We're not going to get back overnight.
But I think if we do that, I think the second thing, too, is it's a matter of some people in the community standing up and trying to make a difference. I know when I was a junior high school principal, we had drug problems and alcohol. There were a group of people within the community. It's a small rural community that came together, 8 or 10 people, who basically said enough is enough. We're going to start helping. Well, I'll tell you what, it was a great help to me as a principal. Because I knew I had a group that I could depend upon who would offer me support if there was a problem, okay? I mean, before it was like you were on your own, the parents would say, well, my child would never do that. Well, unfortunately, your child did do that. And then you were by yourself out there. Well, now you had other parents, other citizens and parents that were coming in and saying, well, what do we got to do to correct this situation? They went and they sat in the courtrooms when judges were assigning penalties to make sure that the judge was not being too lenient or letting it go by. I mean, this was the attitude. They went to borough council meetings, okay?
And I served on the team, so we had regular monthly meetings as for activities going on, which included doing other positive social things in the community for the kids so that they weren't just standing on the corners where they could possibly get into trouble. So there were other things that were going on. I think all of that begins to make. It's almost like the community has to come together. Same thing on employment. I mean, it's just from a standpoint of leadership taken
in the community to say, well, we're going to help people find jobs or help them get trained so they can get jobs, okay? Same thing, too, is if there is a problem at home that could be brought out, that agency is available. You know, there was an effort, and I think in some schools, where we put all the social agencies into the school because they were dealing at home outside of the school. Well, the child was having problems in school. So they tried and worked with both of them from the standpoint of trying to get in and take that social agency to get back to the home with the child at the same time and make sure there was communication, understanding, and assistance wherever it was needed. Okay? It's hard to do, and I'm not going to say it should be done in 501 districts and the thousands of schools that we have, but where there's a problem, at least if we know it's there, I can come and say, well, I can loan you this kind of authority or this kind of assistance so you can go about doing this as far as it goes. The other thing, too, is, you know, we probably end up dating ourselves from the standpoint of age-wise, but I remember the old days, you know, if you were acting up on the far corner, the neighbor down there called up and let you know, and someone went out and said, you know, you got a call, you got home, and what were you doing down there? Today, if someone calls up, well, it's like mind your own business. Well, part of the thing is it's not a matter of picking. You know, you'll have some neighbors who'll be grouchy and complain all the time. But there's others who, you know, can see a child misbehaving and say, you know, that's not the right thing to do. I mean, I just found of an incident in my town where a gentleman put the papers out to be picked up for the recycling. Two young boys came up and just kicked the papers all over the place. The guy came out and said, hey, you're not supposed to do that. Put them in. They end up beating the guy up. I flip out on something like that, okay? And that's not the kind of society we should be living in. That's not what we should be tolerating. And you know, this is the kind of stuff that has to stop. And, you know, it's almost like we got to take back society for ourselves. In that process, we may have to give up some of the things we like that individuality, I can do my own thing. Well, if you want to go out and live in nature by yourself, you can do your own thing. But when you live with other people, you have to be considerate of them. And we're failing to do that.
Wow, you hit on every subject imaginable. I also want to bring in the issue of single parenting as well. I noticed as I travel around to the prisons across the state of Pennsylvania that the majority of the a great majority of the prisoners are from single parent homes, and said to me, had I lived in a community that supported me, because my mom had to go out to work in order to support us, life may have been different. But I ended up in a gang, I ended up in trouble, and here's where I am. So there, you're right, the issues are vast, and there's a huge amount. We're almost to the end of our program.
I'll just add something, then if I can, I have to, because I think even in the single parents, that single parent has to be strong. And I can understand it, because we can look at the research, and it points out all of the areas where single parents, the other thing is, my sociology class, 50% of today's marriages are going to end up in divorce. That's kind of scary, okay? By the same token, I've got to tell you, too, is I'm a single parent. My mother raised me from 1.5 to 14. And I, like I said, thank God for the mother I had, because my mom was strong. My mom had a set of values. She knew what she wanted me to do, and I was going to do it.
My mom said no.
And I knew when she said no, I knew what she meant. No, she didn't like doing it from time to time. And, you know, it was tough on her, and it was tough on me. But I've got to say this. I think it made the difference. And so I'm going to say, as much as I know one parenting can be difficult, and it is, I still think from the standpoint, too, is if that person's strong enough and puts enough in it and is still concerned to be the one parent, if
that's what it has to be. You know, you don't,
I'll admit, I miss some things, but I think I turned out all right. And I thank my mother for that, because she's the one that made the difference there.
You mean my teenagers are going to appreciate me someday for being a single mother? I have that to look forward to. You have been listening to Children Come First with Dr. Daria Brzezinski, and we have been here with Senator James Rhodes
from Pennsylvania,
Senatorial District of the 29th Senatorial District, Schuylkill, Carbon, and part of Monroe County. And we greatly appreciate his time for an hour today, because we know how busy he is doing all kinds of things for our state. There was so much we wanted to talk about, but thank you so very much for your time. We greatly appreciate it. Would you like to say anything in closing?
No, thank you. It's been a great opportunity. And
I just appreciate the opportunity to talk about education and the things we can do for our kids. And I think the bottom line we got to look at whenever we do any of this is we do it for the kids. I know that's a cliche. We say that all the time. But that's what we should be. That's what we should be doing. And in some of the cases, like I say, as adults, we got to give up for our kids. And if we do, we're going to be awful glad when we see how they turn out later on that we did do it for them.
Join us again for our next program. Thank you.
And make sure you give your children a hug.